Nama ni tu ke?
Nama ni tu.
I want to talk to you about a particular experience of failure that I've had. Failure, worse really than just ordinary failure, for somebody in my position, failure in Buddhist practice. At the beginning of the year, Shantikar, I think, invited us to join the Million Nembutsu recitation. And I thought, that's too many. But I'll give it a go a day at a time and just see how it feels. And I worked out that if I did, I've got a mala, which is two loops of 54 beads each, sort of strung together in a figure of eight. So you move one, you go around one loop of 15 beads, and then you move one bead on the other side, and you go around again. That's about 2,800, 2,900 recitations. It was taking me about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And I knew if I did that many each day, that would be enough to do a million by the end of the year. And the first day I did it, I thought, oh yeah, I quite enjoy this. And the second day I enjoyed it. And the third day I thought, well, I've done it for 3 days, now surely I can do the rest of the year. So I did a month, and then I missed a day. So I did two lots the next day to catch up. And then I did a few more days and I missed 2 days, so I had to catch up, you know. I remember sitting out here one evening before the service started doing the practice, thinking, okay, well, that's yesterday's done, now I need to fit today's in. And eventually I realised that it had become, well, I didn't even realise that it had become about trying to fit it in and tick it off, like collecting stamps, really, you know, just to make sure that I'd got everyone. And then I missed a few more days, and eventually I realised that I wasn't doing the practice anymore. And that was quite a difficult realisation in a way, because I had set up myself as this person who was going to do a million Nembutsu, and that would make me special in a particular way. And I'd belong to this little club of people. I didn't pay much attention to the fact that Dhamma Vidya had done hundreds of thousands, you know, in a few days, in the first few days of January. And it actually struck me pretty deeply, this sense of, really, it was the sense of the ego collapsing in on itself. But there were two things. There was that sense of the ego collapsing on itself, but also that sense of, I can't even do this spiritual practice that takes 20 minutes. I can't even find 20 minutes to do the core practice of my tradition, which I'm now sitting here in my robes next to the shrine teaching. And actually, I was doing practice at other times of the day. I was doing Nembutsu as I was going to sleep at night, or just sitting quietly in between clients. So it wasn't as if all my practice had finished. But the amount of Nembutsu that I needed to get to a million wasn't happening. And it got to the point where I didn't even know how many days that I needed to catch up on. So I couldn't even say, well, I'll do a week's retreat and get back on track. I was pretty emotional, really, when I sort of really sat down and realised that I wasn't going to complete the Million Nembutsu Challenge. Or at least, you know, acknowledging what my experience had been up until then. But in that moment, another thought appeared, which was, regardless of how well or how badly you've done at this, it's interesting that some people are calling it a challenge as well, because that, you know, that sets it up in a particular kind of way. Regardless of whether you think you've succeeded or failed at this spiritual practice, Amida still loves you. And that's really quite a profound experience, and it's that experience of those two experiences. Satya said, when I did the Dharma talk last week, you use the word experience a lot of times. Of those two, I don't know any other words that mean the same thing. The sensation of having failed at the practice, and also the very felt sensation of, despite that, still being loved by the Buddha. This is where the Pure Land One experience, that is the essence of Pure Land practice. We're all beings who set ourselves up to be more or less than we are. And at some points, we collide with reality and realize that we have done that. That we have been telling ourselves that we can do something that we can't, or that we're failing in particular ways that we're not seeing. The dark corners of our ego are exposed when they meet the real world. But that exposure allows Amida's light to shine onto those places. And when the light shines onto those places, they can be begin to transform. I can't remember the name of the Chinese master who first coined the phrase turning bits of rubble into gold, but that was his experience of Pure Land practice, that the more he was able to experience and give to Amida the pieces of rubble that were his life, the more they started to take on a different hue and become something else, not by any dint of the spiritual practice, but by a power that came from outside of him. So why do we do practice in that case then? In a few minutes we're going to do the continuous recitation practice, a little bit of it this evening. That's the practice I failed at. Why are we going to do it this evening? Two reasons. Because any practice can lead to an experience. Any sustained spiritual practice can lead to the experience of us meeting ourselves in the way that I met myself when I realised that I wasn't doing the practice, really seeing the truth of our own situation. Whether that happens because we can't do the practice, or whether it happens because suddenly we have a real sense of ourselves as being a foolish being in a way that wasn't true before, it doesn't matter. Even if we fail at the practice completely, without the vehicle of the practice, we wouldn't necessarily have had that experience of seeing ourselves fail in that particular way and still feeling loved by Amida. I was going to say that the second reason is that practice is a container, but it occurs to me that's the same as the first reason. But another way of saying that is that the practice is the container within which those kinds of experiences can happen. And of course they can happen elsewhere in life. It's like if you're a gardener, flowers can grow anywhere, but you can help them grow by preparing the soil in a particular way, by ensuring that no weeds grow, by watering them. And that's like doing the practice, really. It's preparing the ground in a particular way that makes it more likely that we'll have an experience of meeting ourselves and also of meeting the Buddha. And you can meet those two things, as I say, anywhere, but I think it's more likely to happen in spiritual practice. So it's good to do practice. It's also important to remember that, regardless of whether you do the practice or not, and of how well you do the practice, you are still held and loved by Amida Buddha. You're still going to the Pure Land. You're still going to be enlightened as a result of something that is outside of your control. And it's almost your faith in that principle as much as the practice. In fact, in this school, we say that those two things are one and the same, that lead to your being reborn in the Pure Land. So when we do the practice, we are trusting that Amida Buddha is going to come and save us, because that's what the practice is. And when we trust that Amida Buddha is going to come and save us, whatever form that takes, that's the practice. As long as that's at the core of what we're doing, we're going to be led to the Pure Land. And sometimes that will mean having experiences of doing spiritual practices and failing at them. Sometimes it will mean that we feel a great joy at being saved by Amida Buddha, and the spiritual practice comes out of that sense, and it's a real celebration of our salvation. But it will always mean that we're going to be reborn in the Pure Land. Namo Amida Buddha. Thank you.